From the voice.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Ngoga. This evening, we look at the growth of democratic institutions in Africa, the case study of Zambia. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, TV English Africa. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And also joining us is another colleague, Blessings Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Blessings, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Douglas.
You're very much welcome. As I said, tonight we are looking at the growth of democratic institutions in Africa. Recently, there was an election in Zambia, and despite what skeptics said, it went through very well, and voters picked Hakainde Hichilema, a businessman who had lost five previous bids for the job, to take over from Edgar Lungu, who has led the Southern African nation since 2015. Let me start here in Studio Vicente. Yes. Zambia, he is a man who has contested several times. He didn't give up. The people didn't give up. Outgoing president Lungu eventually complained, in fact, even that the election was being rigged. He was in charge of organizing the election. This is quite a study in the democratic institutions in the continent.
I think it's such a stunning study in the growing of democratic institutions in Africa. Certainly not perfect, but what we saw first from Hichilema is the resilience and persistence in, vying for a position of the highest office in the land. Given the kind of frustration that we know we saw him go through over the years, and especially during the time of Edgar Lungu, it was really remarkable that he persisted and pushed on, and eventually he is the president today. But one of the things that has to be appreciated about the election in Zambia is that we have seen successfully now power transfer from one person to the other, and it's been from ruling party to opposition to another ruling party to an opposition party. And that is something that when we look across the continent is a rarity. It is something we always look forward to, but we don't get to witness. Elections are always fraught with tension, violence, uncertainty, and in many cases the incumbents are not known to accept defeat, to accept loss, and so they would rather disrupt the peace of the land. They would rather find a way to manipulate the constitution in order to stay on in power. So we've seen things happening a bit differently in Zambia, which is a good study in how democracy grows. They are yet to get there. Now, what was particularly remarkable in this case is that the incumbent was so confident he was going to win. First, we know he was organizing the election. We witnessed him deploy soldiers to certain regions, especially the opposition strongholds. And this was, of course, intended to intimidate the voters. But at the end of the day, the masses, especially the youth, prevailed by turning up in large numbers and voting for their candidate, who was Hakainde Hichilema. And initially, a day or two before the official results, of course, we saw the incumbent trying to start to cast doubts on the validity of the votes and talking about the votes, the election having not been free and fair. But when he looked at the percentage by which he was losing this election, he realized he had to accept defeat. And to see him come up and actually acknowledge the win of the election and call him His Excellency Hichilema Hakainde, or Hakainde Hichilema, that was remarkable. And I think it's a good example. Zambia is not yet there, like many countries in Africa, but it is on the path of democracy, and that is a lesson that many countries can learn from south to north, west to east.
Blessing, your general take on this election and compare it to the region there, because we have had elections there. Other people don't even allow the opposition candidates to campaign. So what's your general take on this result?
It is very significant victory, because I think there were fears in the Southern African region that Zambia was bound to become the new Zimbabwe, because former President Edgar Lungu was putting in place some very, very repressive laws. So that is why there was so much fear that the country was headed in the wrong direction. But I think importantly, apart from what Vincent has said about the power of the incumbent leader, we have seen that in many, many countries, the president, you know, enjoys a lot of support, say, by handpicking members of the army and the police. And one of the things that Hichilema did was to fire all the police chiefs and also the army top brass, because they were not allowing him to campaign, citing COVID-19 regulations, whereas the Patriotic Front of former President Lungu was allowed to campaign. But I think one issue that is also significant is the issue of the economy. Is the economy stupid, so they say? You'd see that ahead of the elections, Zambia's economy was performing poorly. Unemployment was very high, particularly amongst the youth. And you must remember that this is the group that actually helped swing the outcome in Hichilema's favor. There was also the issue of corruption that the Lungu administration was failing to handle. Of course, Zambia, the external debt, 12 billion, the country mostly relies on copper. And the problem is sometimes the prices are usually determined by the international markets. It does not have control. So over-reliance on copper, I think, has been Zambia's downfall. So those are some of the issues that President Lungu clearly failed to resolve, resulting, I think, in this rather shocking defeat. He lost by close to or over a million votes, something that was not expected. So in the region, or in Africa in general, I think one hopes that this can be replicated in Cameroon, in Zimbabwe, for example, where there are serious problems. But also, interestingly, in the region, we also saw another peaceful transfer of power, although there were hiccups in Malawi, where President Lazarus Chakwera defeated Professor Peter Mutharika. Also, under this COVID pandemic, of course, there were problems when it comes to the opposition campaigning, as the ruling party in Malawi and in Zambia cite these COVID regulations to thwart the opposition from campaigning. So I think in terms of democracy, it's a step forward, just hoping that it can be replicated in other countries.
Vincent, we give credit to Lungu for having conceded and allowed things to work, but it was not for lack of trying, because as Blessing there mentioned, even ahead of the elections, there were irregularities in voter registration. There was reports of violently squashing opposition demonstrations. And even during the voting, the government deployed military to the streets, citing attacks on Lungu supporters. And it restricted access to social media sites, a decision that a court quickly overturned. Despite all this, other leaders would have gone a step further. Credit should be given to Lungu for having at least held back and found where to stop.
Exactly. I mean, propensity to disrupt the peace of a country for personal and selfish, need to hang on to power is something that tends to be very present on the continent of Africa. Now, Lungu definitely could have tried that, but I think he might have looked back to the history of Zambia and realized that there's none of the recent leaders of Zambia that pulled such kind of a stunt to plunge the country into chaos. Zambia has a history of peace, Zambians have been known to be peaceful people even during difficult times. He might have drawn back to the history of the country, the recent history of the country. But also I think credit has to be given to the voters themselves. The overwhelming numbers of votes by which Hichilema won were on themselves actually a very compelling reason for Edgar Lungu to acknowledge this defeat. How were you going to tell 1.something million people that their votes didn't mean anything? And I think the Electoral Commission was going to have a very, very difficult time to try and play any kind of shenanigans around these elections. So while the desire might have been there to either manipulate the election or to interfere with the process, it was an impossibility because of the turnout itself. The other thing I think one has to acknowledge is that there was, of course, Lungu had kind of indicated discomfort with this loss. But I think looking at, you know, what's going on around his own region, as you say, there was a good model of Malawi. Why would he want to plunge his country into chaos or to cause a lot of unnecessary disruptions when there was a peaceful transfer of power in neighboring Malawi? So sometimes when you have good examples around you, you are likely to act, you know, differently. So credit does go to him. But again, credit for what? I mean, he did what he is supposed to do. And I think circumstances might have forced him to do the right thing. And that is what all leaders should do. Allow the democratic processes to take place and accept the verdict, which is the wish of the people, whichever direction it takes you.
A blessing, is it Lungu's credit or maybe some institutions in Zambia actually worked?
Of course, there are such complaints, for example, in Zimbabwe, that the judiciary is largely controlled by the government, or one may say the ruling ZANU-PF party. And if the opposition, for example, appeals against alleged misconduct during the elections, the judges, everyone pretty much alleges that they side with the ruling party. Of course, I think going back to Zambia, you see that Lungu had actually tried that to weaken key democratic institutions such as the police, like I mentioned earlier, the army and all that. But at the end of the day, I think to Vincent's point, the margin was just too high. You know, he could not overturn this Hichilema victory because the margin was a million. That's not a joke. So I think rigging can happen if the turnout is low. I think you can give the ruling parties that leeway to rig elections. But I think what Lungu did should also be commended. I mean, looking at what happened in America, way up to now, former President Donald Trump has not even considered that he lost to President Joe Biden. So that becomes a problem because many people actually look at America and say this is a democracy at play. So there is a problem, you know, with leaders, be it in Africa or here in America or in other parts of the world, that many simply do not want to leave power even if they lose elections. But you know what happens? There was a coup in Zimbabwe that ousted former President Robert Gabriel Mugabe, now late. And we have seen this in other African countries, in Nigeria, you know, in Ghana, simply because, you know what happens. If a cop stays for too long, it will chase away mourners. So that's the problem that... you have also seen some leaders changing the constitution, even Lungu. I think there were complaints about that because he was arguing that he was only finishing former President Sata's term. So he changed the constitution so that he could run again. So sometimes we have progressive constitutions that say you can only run for two terms, but they've been changed in Namibia, for example. We have seen it in Rwanda. APC. So those are some of the problems with African democracy.
Vincent, we talk about the Lungu and all these and institutions. I think also credit goes to the people themselves, because in some countries people are cowed down. They don't fight. Say some of them say leader tries, an abortion leader tries once and twice. Say, you have failed, you have failure. Yeah. So they push him aside. That didn't happen in Zambia.
That's why I said a lot of credit has to go to the voters themselves. You know, the voters at some point realize that the incumbent or the people who are in positions of power at that particular time may want to actually manipulate elections, may want to continue staying in power by hook or crook. Now, when the people realize that, they know that numbers make a difference. And that is when people can come out, instead of coming out to protest on the streets after the election, they decide to come out in large numbers to vote, because when that force of the vote is apparent to the whole world, it becomes impossible to manipulate these elections. But of course, we've seen also the destruction of the incumbents denying the victor their rightful place, and again, especially it is dangerous when the vote, and I think that's what Zulu was alluding to, when the vote is too close, it's easy for the incumbent to now, turn things around. So the credit goes to the Zambians for having made sure that the margin was so wide, yes, that it was impossible to do anything about it. But now, I wanted to mention that, you see, we have a history on the continent that people can also make some reference to. The year 2007, there was an election in Kenya where undeniably the opposition leader Raila Odinga was winning the election. Mm-hmm. And the incumbent Mwai Kibaki realized that, because at a particular point it was very clear that all his significant votes had already come in. Mm-hmm. Whatever was left out there could never give him a victory, and Raila Odinga was going to win. This is a fact. It's there. Mm-hmm. What did he do? He decided to stop the process of tallying the votes. Mm-hmm. They instructed the Electoral Commission to stop transmitting any further results, and got sworn in at night at State House, which was on its own very telling. The fact that you get sworn in at night in State House without any witnesses, without the usual, inauguration kind of ceremonies that we know. Now, what did that do? Why do I mention that? It led the country to an explosion of violence. And that actually stained Kenya as a democracy at that point, and it took a long time for the country to come to a level of stability that we're kind of witnessing today. But even since then, of course, there have been complaints of manipulation of the elections of those who are the incumbents. So the power of the people can be displayed during the election, and sometimes it becomes too much for even the incumbent to push back, and they're left with no option but to acknowledge the verdict of the people, just as Mr. Lungu did in Zambia.
Blessing, do you agree with Vincent? Because, you see, even the Electoral Commission there at least had the courage to tally the results and announce them as they were. In other countries, they have been, the commission has been cowed, and then in some countries actually have been told what to declare.
Indeed, we saw that in Zimbabwe in 2008 when President Mugabe lost the first round to Tsvangirai. Elections were not declared for more than 20 days. They were supposed to be declared in 3 to 5 days, but it took 20 days. Though Tsvangirai won, the final tally was that he did not have the 50 plus one vote to become the president. He fell short, but many people still argue to this day that, for those 21 days, they were playing with the numbers. But I think it also goes to the fact that if the margin is small, there is room to rig elections. The other problem in Africa are the regional bodies that you have, like ECOWAS, like SADC in Southern Africa. Usually they just declare that elections are free and fair. There is no... most of the institutions are, you know, like old boys clubs,
mm-hmm.
you know, African leaders protecting each other. So this, they do not, like, empower these electoral bodies in the region, you know, to make sure that they are independent, and then they are backing them, you know, because the regional bodies will be... would have declared the election free and fair. We saw that happening in Malawi. You know, as soon as the election was done, there was a lot of allegations that it was rigged. The electoral body in Malawi announced the results, said Mutharika had won, but Chakwera appealed to the Supreme Court, and eventually, you know, they discovered that there were some irregularities. But, of course, the Southern African Development Community, the African Union had all declared that election free and fair. So those are some of the problems that the institutions that are supposed to protect democracy in Africa are not doing enough. Hence, you have these serious problems.
I see. Vicent, blessing there mentioned that's an important factor because these regional blocs, South African Community, SADC, ECOWAS, as he says, they are members club of some sort,
yes.
And it would help if they were united in advancing in the democratic values and saying no, you can't go there.
Yes, let me tell you, I've covered elections in a number of countries, and one of the most frustrating thing is to sit and listen to briefing by the heads of these observer groups, especially African ones. So first thing you realize is that they're normally led by a former African leader, a former president who also has gone through the same processes as an incumbent and who probably has some ties even with the person who is running, who is the incumbent in a particular country. So these are not people who are thoroughly free, they're not necessarily very independent in their thinking because they are a product of the same system, and they tend to defend and protect the faulty or the systems that exist because they want to look like they're good Africans. So they will never tell you what, you know, ideally is the reality that the elections were not free and fair, because in their assessment, by doing that, they will be interfering with a piece of a particular country. So many times they will tell you there were just minor issues here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And they will declare all those elections usually free and fair, even when there is open rigging, when it is as clear as you can imagine. Rigged or interfered with or manipulated, whichever you may want to call it. So for me, I think that fails the continent. Those organizations fail the continent. SADC, the East Africa Community, the Africa Union itself. And again, it's a replication of the same, you know, the same people or this agency or these institutions are, or organizations are being led by former African leaders or African high-ranking officials. So I think... there needs to be honesty among Africans, and there needs to be really independent election observers, not made up of former politicians. And there are actually some of those, especially grassroots level observer groups, which never have a high profile appearance, and therefore they never get a lot of coverage. People tend to focus on former president of Sierra Leone was the head of this observer group, and then you interview those people, or the former president of Nigeria. But when you go down to the real independent observer groups in countries, they tell you the truth. And why do they tell you the truth? Normally, they have been there way before the election. They know what has been happening with the Electoral Commission and the other bodies that are involved in the election. They know the politics of the country. They know where corruption is. So when they give you the assessment of the election, they give it to you from a position of knowledge, and they have some experience about how elections are held in those countries. But when you have people just parachuting in, 2 days before the election. They stay in some beautiful hotels. On the day of the election, they just walk about and visit a few polling station and then go back and compile a report. It's usually a big joke. I never take them seriously, honestly.
I see. A blessing, there are some who say the COVID situation may have played a role. As we have seen the last 1 year or so, those elections in Africa during the COVID pandemic, some incumbents have taken advantage. Did it work against Lungu in Zambia, do you think?
Yeah, I think for Lungu, it's the economy. I think that was biggest problem. You know, everything economic-wise was just headed south. So because of that, and also the youth vote, you know, Hichilema was able to take advantage of that even under COVID regulations. But interestingly, the United Nations has warned countries against using COVID-19 to repress the opposition. We have seen this in Zimbabwe. What they did was that they recalled the opposition MPs. You know, the government is accused of supporting one faction of the opposition, the one that is very popular. So they recalled about 80 members of parliament and also councillors. And for almost 9 months now, there are no elections to replace those people because the government is citing COVID-19 regulations. So this has severely weakened the parliament in Zimbabwe. And this has happened also in other countries where, of course, they say the opposition cannot campaign because of COVID. So many repressive regimes have taken advantage of this COVID situation to further weaken democratic institutions.
I see. Obviously, lastly, had Lungu been in power for 20 years, you think this would have happened? And go on.
Certainly not. If he had been in power for too long, as it happens, is that when you stay in power for too long, you start believing that the country belongs to you. The leadership in that country belongs to you. And actually, I had wanted to mention the kind of the same thing that Zulu has just mentioned. When you think of Paul Biya, when you think about the Theodore Obiangs, the Denis Nkweso, one of the things that you will realize when you go to those countries is that those leaders who have stayed too long in power, they feel like they have an ownership of that country. And that is why you would see that all those who have stayed too long in power, in those countries, democracy dies, and over time, they personalize leadership and the country becomes their personal property, and they tend to, they don't have a plan for succession, but when they do have a plan for succession, it is always their children. And we've seen what happened in Libya. However well-intentioned a leader is, he ends up being repressive, and he tends to think of the country as a personal property. So the only way that democracy can flourish is to have term limits. Any president who tells people that he needs to stay in power so long because he wants to fix so many things in the country before he leaves, obviously he has no love for his people. He doesn't care about his country. He cares only about himself. There is no country that can develop and flourish when one particular person personalizes leadership and personalizes the resources and wealth of the nation. It doesn't end well. And finally, I want to say, you can look across the continent. And those who are in power for too long can listen if they want to care to listen to what I'm saying. Nowhere a person has stayed too long that it ended well. It did not end well in Congo. It did not end well in Libya. Doesn't end well for you in Sudan. Doesn't end well for anybody who stays so long in power. Doesn't end well for them as individuals, and the country's always never do well at the end.
I see. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleagues, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, TV English to Africa, and Blessing Zulu of the VOA's Zimbabwe service. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga.